I'm Alicia Menendez of HuffPost Live, here today for Leonard Lopate, and this is WNYC and WNYC.org. You may be what you eat, but what you eat isn't just the raw ingredients of meat, vegetables, and grains. It's also the product of human history. Joining me now to look at how food and eating has changed over the centuries is Massimo Montanari. He is a professor of medieval history and the history of food at the University of Bologna. And his latest book is called Let the Meatballs Rest and Other Stories About Food and Culture. It's published by Columbia University Press, and I am pleased to welcome him to the show today. Hello.
Hello.
So why do you think that the way we treat food, cook it, and eat it can reveal so much about our culture?
Well, I will start from the very title of this book, Let the Meatballs Rest.
I love the way you say
yes.
It.
Yes. Why?
Because it sounds much more authentic when you say, let the meatballs rest, than when
okay.
I just blow through it.
Because this is a very funny way of titling a book. But through this funny expression, I would like to introduce the idea that observing what happens in the kitchen can teach us much of what we can or we must do in our daily life. So when I see that before cooking, the meatballs must rest for blending all ingredients together, for getting better, so I think that this is a good way to think how we should think, how we should produce ideas, taking together many ingredients that we pick up among us, and seeing things, hearing things, observing, reflecting, and so on. We are choosing ingredients, we put them together, we blend them, and then we produce new ideas. But before thinking and before speaking, we must wait, not speaking as soon as we have something to say.
Talk to me about letting the meatballs rest. Where does that culinary wisdom come from?
It comes from Italy, because I'm Italian and my kitchen is in Italy, so I observe what happens in my kitchen. But I think that everywhere in the world, the kitchen can be a metaphor of life. Or I suggest also in the book that life can be a metaphor of kitchen, of cuisine.
Works both ways.
Yes. For example, yesterday evening, we were presenting this book during a dinner, and the first course was a flan. And the flan...
The first course?
Yes.
Ooh, but that's a dessert.
Not a sweet.
Oh.
It was what in Italian we call sformato. It's a flan made with cheese.
Mm.
So the flan is something that must become great inside the oven. But there is one secret. You must not open the oven while it is cooking. It must not be disturbed. If this flan is thought as a person, a man, a woman, that is working, that is thinking, that is reading, well, what... This kind of dish can teach us is that we must be calm, we must be tranquil, we must not be disturbed in our job, and so on. I think that thinking about cuisine and making foods, this book is a collection of observations that I do about objects, about gestures, about ways of doing, ways of being, ways of saying. When you observe attentively what happens around food, you can find many observations useful for your life.
You've explained to me both why I've ruined many a flan and just generally how I could be a better person. So is that to say that cooking can teach us patience. Patience, you know, taking your time.
Yes, you must take your time. Well, you can have also fast food, but usually it is not good. You must have time. You must have time for eating, and you must have time for living. Why not?
When did cooking, as we know it today, really start?
As we know it today, it depends on which part of the world you are talking about. My studies are mainly about Italy, not only, but mainly about Italy. So we could think that our traditions are very old, and they are very old. For example, already in the Middle Ages in Italy, they ate pasta. But the way we eat pasta today is not so old. As a way of eating and seasoning pasta that has been for 200 years, not more. And there is one man that I quote often in my book, that is Pellegrino Artusi, whose book in the end of the 18th century had a very strong impact on Italian food culture, and he diffused the use of pasta through Italy. He diffused the use of tomato sauce on pasta, and all this is not obvious. All this is not normal. All this has a story, and what I am trying to do in my work is to demonstrate that everything has an history, and through food we can reconstruct an history that is not only the history of the food, but it is a cultural history, it is a social history, economic history, religious history. Everything can be. I think that the historians of food are very voracious, because they would like to say anything starting from the dish, from what you are eating.
Well, one of those foods is bread, which you write about as not being a natural food, but a product of technology. Why was bread a sign of how sophisticated man in ancient times was becoming?
This is a very interesting image we have. We think often of bread as something simple, elementary. On the contrary, bread is a very sophisticated food. It is artificial food. It is made by man. It is one food that no other animal can do and can eat. So that's the reason why in ancient times, in the Mediterranean civilizations, already the Egypt ones Mesopotamian, Greek and Roman, and so on, bread was thought as the very emblem of civilization, as the demonstration, as the food that only man can construct, can build, as the demonstration that men can do their own food, that they can build in the same way as they do their drink, that is wine. So wine and bread, we think of them as very natural foods and drinks, but they are artificial. And what I stress often is that in ancient way of saying, in ancient way of thinking, the very concept of artificial was a very positive one. Not like today. When today we speak about something artificial, we have a negative image of that. But in ancient times, it was exactly the contrary. So artificial was the strength of the man who can manage the nature and make something good from that.
I'm Alicia Menendez, and today for Leonard Lopate, our guest is Massimo Montanari. He is the author of Let the Meatballs Rest and Other Stories About Food and Culture. That's published by Columbia University Press. You are listening to WNYC and WNYC. foodsfortheheart.org. Massimo, how have our attitudes about other foods changed? There's always this conversation in America about the fact that lobster used to be this thing we gave poor people and then it became a delicacy. Are there other examples of how our attitude about specific items have changed over time?
You mean that we are changing our habits, our food habits,
changing our attitude. Habits and our perception, right? Like you gave the example of artificial, and that artificial used to be a good thing, and now it's become a bad thing. In the States, lobster used to be this, you know, disgusting thing, and then it became an amazing thing. Are there other examples of
this,
that?
This is very nice to be thought. In Europe, in Italy too, we have dishes that originally were not perceived as something luxury, as something delicious, as something good, because they were connected with poverty. They were connected with the food of poor people, of peasants. And this shows how what we think about food is never only connected with the nutritional values and the tastes of the food, but to ideas that we put inside the food. We always say and repeat that we are what we eat, and that's true. But I love to think that it's also true that we eat what we are, because what is inside the food is not really and only the food, but the food plus ideas, symbols, values that we ourselves have put inside the food. So when we eat something, we eat also the ideas that men have incorporated in the food. So we eat what we are in some way.
I love that idea. I love the idea also of how that relates to family and the things that we pass on from generation to generation. So for me to, you know, eat my aunt's arroz con frijoles is not just to eat rice and beans. It's to eat this thing that has been perfected generation to generation of women in my families, and such that this simple dish then carries a lot of meaning.
Well, passing the knowledge from the generation to generation is a very beautiful thing that gives us the idea of the cultural transmission of a history of a tradition that continues. But an historian must not stop to hear, must not stop in saying that, because this tradition is always renewed. This tradition is always reconstructed. And if someone asks me, what is tradition? Well, my answer is that tradition is an innovation well made, a successful innovation. So from generation to generation, we transmit our knowledge, but every generation must innovate this tradition and build new traditions. We must not have fear about innovation, because innovation and tradition, in a sense, are the same thing.
Right. Well, how has hunger shaped our concept of food?
Hunger is a very important actor of food history. As an historian, I think that the historians sometimes make an error. That is to think the history of food as a double history. On one part, the history of hunger. On the other hand, the history of pleasure. I think the two stories must be connected, because many gastronomic invention that we have, in fact, have their roots in hunger. I make you an example. All that great culture of salami, sausages, and cheeses that is today in our culture, one of the main expressions of gastronomic luxury.
Delicious.
Have been invented as a way of conservating food for hunger.
All right, we're going to have to end on that note. I've been speaking with Massimo Montanari. He's a professor of medieval history and the history of food at the University of Bologna. His latest book is Let the Meatballs Rest and Other Stories About Food and Culture. It's published by Columbia University Press. Massimo, thank you.
Thank you.